Sede vacante is a Latin phrase that means the chair is empty. According to Wikipedia, it refers to a bishopric that is empty or diocese without a bishop. This occurs when a bishop dies, resigns, or is reassigned before his replacement is installed. This also happens when a pope dies or, in rare occasions, resigns before a conclave is held and the College of Cardinals elect his successor. That period of time when there is no pope is called a sede vacante. The chair, in this case of Peter, is empty. This can last for weeks, months, even years until the conclave elects a new pope. Some believe that the church is currently in a state of sede vacante, and those men during and since the Second Vatican Council that the world called popes, John 23rd, Paul VI, John Paul I, John Paul II, Benedict XVI, and of course Francis, were and are in fact not popes, but rather anti-popes. These people are called sede vacantists. And indeed, the Catholic Church has had anti-popes in the past. Shortly before the Protestant Reformation, there were three men who claimed to be the pope. And there are others in our own time who claim to be pope because people who, believing the chair of Peter to be empty, elected them pope. Men like Pope Michael, who was elected pope by his mom, his dad, and a couple of other people, who lived in relative obscurity until film students from Notre Dame made a documentary about him. That and the internet gave him a fairly decent following before his passing. This last summer, his followers had a conclave and elected his successor, Pope Michael II. But I don't want to talk about these guys, the classic sede vacantists, who believe the church apostatized at Vatican II. I want to talk about the new sede vacantists, people who never thought in a million years they would be sede vacantists, who struggle to find a name for their movement because they don't want to be called sede vacantists. Sede vacantist or sede vacantism has already been taken, and the word implies a belief system that they don't subscribe to. So we should find another name for them. I've heard interregnumist mentioned, meaning they don't recognize Francis and are waiting for the next conclave for us to have a legitimate pope. However, since a good portion of the cardinals were appointed by Francis, what does that say about the next conclave? But still, sede vacantist doesn't really fit in the common use of the term. After all, unlike classic sede vacantism, they by and large accept Vatican II, the new mass, the new rites. They accept all the post-Vatican II popes as valid popes, except for one, Pope Francis. And these are not people on the fringes of Catholicism. Father Altman has recently come out with a video declaring that Jorge Bergoglio, aka Pope Francis, is not the pope. Former Catholic Answers host Patrick Coffin believes that Francis is not the pope, and Taylor Marshall has at least explored the possibility. Whether he has officially declared that Francis is not pope, I don't know. I haven't watched Taylor Marshall in a while. Now you might say, but those people are on the fringes of Catholicism. Well, they weren't before they took this controversial position. 2 years ago, all these people were mainstream. I mean, you don't get more mainstream Catholicism than Catholic Answers. But why would these people take such a controversial position? In some cases, risking their livelihood and reputation. Because not only do they believe Francis is not the pope, they believe Francis is actively trying to destroy the church. Some believe a prophecy by St. Francis of Assisi is being fulfilled. That reads, "The time is fast approaching in which there will be great trials and afflictions, perplexities and dissensions, both spiritual and temporal, will abound. The charity of many will grow cold, and the malice of the wicked will increase. The devils will have unusual power. The immaculate purity of our order and of others will be so much obscured that there will be very few Christians who obey the true sovereign pontiff and the Roman Church with loyal hearts and perfect charity. At the time of this tribulation, a man not canonically elected will be raised to the pontificate, who by his cunning will endeavor to draw many into error and death. Then scandals will be multiplied, our order will be divided, and many others will be entirely destroyed because they will consent to error instead of opposing it. There will be such diversity of opinions and schism among the people, the religious and the clergy, that except those days were shortened, according to the words of the gospel, even the elect would be led into error, were they not specifically guided amid such great confusion by the immense mercy of God. Then our rule and manner of life will be violently opposed by some, and terrible trials will come upon us. Those who are found faithful will receive the crown of life, but woe to those who, trusting solely in their order, shall fall into tepidity, for they will not be able to support the temptations permitted for the providing of the elect. Those who persevere in their fervor and adhere to virtue with love and zeal for the truth will suffer injuries and persecutions as rebels and as schismatics, for the persecutors urged on by the evil spirits will say they are rendering a great service to God by destroying such pestilent men from the face of the earth. But the Lord will be the refuge of the afflicted and will save all who trust in him. And in order to be like their head, Christ, these, the elect, will act with confidence and by their death will purchase for themselves eternal life, choosing to obey God rather than men. They will fear nothing, and they will prefer to perish rather than consent to falsehood and perfidy. Some preachers will keep silence about the truth, and others will trample it underfoot and deny it. Sanctity of life will be held in derision, even by those who outwardly profess it. For in those days, Jesus Christ will send them not a true pastor, but a destroyer. This does sound like our times. And there are at least four reasons why Francis may not be the Pope and the chair of Peter empty. Now, let me say right off the bat that I accept that Francis is the Pope. However, there is a lot of smoke here, and I'd be lying if I said that I didn't have doubts about the legitimacy of his pontificate and that he may be the fulfillment of this prophecy of St. Francis, whom Bergoglio curiously named himself after. I have just chosen to err on the side of recognize and resist, for reasons I will get into at the end of the video. Now, I'm not going to go into depth with these reasons. I'm just going to present them and give a brief explanation. I have a video exploring this possibility titled, Who's Pope, Francis or Benedict? But basically it says, according to the Code of Canon Law, the Pope must resign the munus, which is Latin for office. However, although Benedict used the word munus several times in his declaration, when announcing what he was resigning, he used the word ministerio, Latin for ministry, showing that he only intended to resign part of the papacy, the active part, while retaining the charism of the papacy. Those who hold this opinion cite previous writings as well as interviews to show that Benedict thought this was possible when in fact it is not. This, they say, shows substantial error, which the Code of Canon Law says invalidates a resignation. They point out that the Code of Canon Law also states the resignation must be properly manifest, yet Benedict continued to wear papal clothing, give papal blessings in his own name, and in fact continued to go by the name Pope Benedict, rather than returning to being called Cardinal Ratzinger. Since Benedict never actually resigned regardless of what he and the world thought, the Code of Canon Law says a resignation is invalid by the law itself and does not have to be recognized by anyone. The election of Jorge Bergoglio was therefore invalid. And since Benedict is dead, the chair is empty. The Code of Canon Law states that a resignation done out of fear or coercion is not valid. Various reports have surfaced over the years claiming that Pope Benedict was forced to resign by nefarious forces in the Vatican to make way for a more progressive pope. Some sources are credible journalists, including an Italian journalist who claims that they were told in 2015 by a member of the United States NSA that Benedict would be forced to resign. This theory says that a secret group within the Vatican called the St. Gallen Mafia colluded to elect Francis the Pope in order to get radical changes in the Church they could not get done under John Paul II and Benedict XVI. Knowing this group existed and planned to overtake a future conclave, John Paul II put rules in place that allowed discussion among cardinals, but forbade any collusion to elect any certain individual, declaring that such activity would invalidate the individual's election to the papacy. There is quite a bit of evidence to support the existence of the St. Gallen Mafia and its role in the last conclave, with reports of deathbed confessions and some members just outright admitting it. It is the common opinion among the saints and doctors of the church that if a pope falls into heresy, he loses his office. And since Francis clearly has fallen into heresy, he is no longer the pope. Therefore, the chair of Peter is empty. I find this argument to be the least convincing. Most of the heretical statements attributed to Francis are hearsay. A reporter will report that Francis said X, then the Vatican will release a statement saying that's a misquote or that's not what he meant, etc. Yes, it's frustrating that Francis continues to allow himself to be misquoted if he is being misquoted, but none of that can be taken seriously. The most concrete example of heresy is the signing of the Abu Dhabi document, which declares that God wills the plurality of all religions, which is false and heretical. However, when confronted about this, Francis said that he meant in God's permissive will, which is not heretical. But how far does the heresy have to go before a pope loses his office? Does it have to be an official papal statement, or does he simply have to have a heretical thought? If that's the case, can we be sure any of the popes were legitimate? And who gets to decide? Not to mention, this is a theological opinion, not a doctrine, so we can't even be sure if it's true. Like I said, I accept that Francis is the pope, mainly because I don't believe laymen should be making these decisions. It's not for us to say. Our job is to raise our families, go to Mass, confession, and be prayerful. Whether or not Francis is truly the Pope has no effect on that. He has said nothing that we have to pay attention to, and if he does in the future, we simply ignore it or we disobey. The Pope is not all-powerful. He can be wrong. Only Protestants and low-information Catholics believe in ultramontanism. So you'll have to know your faith. We don't live in a time when we can just go to Mass, send our kids to catechism/PSR, and let the church transmit the faith. And that's the case whether Francis is the Pope or not. So you need to be reading the councils, read the scholastics, the early church fathers, and of course the Bible, and teach your children the faith. And when you hear some wacky thing coming from the mouths of those who are in charge of the church, Francis or otherwise, you tell your kids, he's wrong, the Council of Trent says X, for example. If Francis turns out not to be the Pope, the only thing that would affect for us are saints and indulgences. So don't pray to the Francis canonized saints if you have your doubts about it. There's literally thousands of others that are not doubtful. Don't go after the Francis indulgences. Stick with the tried and true. You can't go wrong with praying the rosary. It is the most indulgent devotion that we have. In fact, if you go to Latin Mass, there's confession, public recitation of the rosary, after which they pray for the Pope's intentions, and of course communion. You have a plenary indulgence handed to you every Sunday. We don't need the Francis indulgences. And to anyone who holds the opinion for one reason or another that Francis is not the Pope, I'm not going to throw stones at you, call you a schismatic, or tell you you're going to hell. I don't agree with you, but I get it. I will say that I believe people are tempted to say to vacantism, whether classic or new, because of the situation in the church, and we do need to be careful with that. But St. Cajetan said, if someone for a reasonable motive holds the person of the Pope in suspicion and refuses his presence, even his jurisdiction, he does not commit the delict of schism, nor any other whatsoever, provided that he would be ready to accept the Pope were he not held in suspicion. And I do believe the quote applies in the situation we find ourselves in with Francis. But if we assume that Francis is the Pope and it turns out he's not, we will not be held responsible at our judgment, since we simply recognized what the visible church was telling us. But if we deny he's the Pope and it turns out that he is, that might result in a different outcome. In the end, history will show who's right. I'm not saying I'm right and you're wrong. I don't know if I'm right. I'm saying whoever is left holding the bag at the end of what's coming, the chastisement, will settle the issue. All the other groups will be gone, and whoever's left, whether it's the mainstream church of today, the Sedevac Contists, some conclavist group who elected their own pope, the SSPX, or whoever, they are the Catholic Church and always were. Until my next video, God bless.